Let me ask you a question. If you really wanted to change the world, what sort of people would you start with? See, if you really wanted to change the world, you wouldn't start with people you could only describe as faulty goods, would you? Certainly you wouldn't start with people like that in small quantities and completely under-resourced, because the world's a big place. And personnel, as we all know, are after all the key to any operation. You want to pick out, for your big project, the most confident, the most articulate, the brightest and the best, when there's a big project on. See, the trouble is, Jesus didn't. He's died on the cross and made a perfect sacrifice for sin. And then he's been laid in a grave and he's been raised gloriously from the dead. Powerfully. But the day after the resurrection, his team then amounted to one complete traitor. 10 men who had totally deserted him, and one loud character who had blaspheming, denied all knowledge of Jesus, in spite of explicit warning about it. How's that for a start? And of course it's worse than that, because by this point, the one who had completely betrayed him into the hands of men had panicked, despaired, and killed himself. So now he hasn't even got 12 left. He's only got 11 of these duffers to be going on with. Not even enough for a Jewish synagogue to be started, because they needed 12 for that. A few broken down followers, running scared. But with those broken few, the Lord Jesus Christ is going to transform the world. It's hard to escape the conclusion that Jesus is in the business of recycling broken disciples. Tell me you don't know any broken disciples. People who's following of Jesus, well, the wheel has come off somewhere along the road. We all know people in that position. And you could, I don't know, I know nothing, I don't know you very well, that's a good thing, isn't it? I could say too much. There could be somebody sitting in here today who's here because they come, but inwardly, we are broken followers of Jesus. And the reality is that the following stopped a little way back. Jesus is in the business of recycling broken disciples, not just patching them up, but transforming them into a world-beating team of dynamic men on a mission. And a mission that was the hope of humanity. Now then, how did he set about doing that? Because you see, I know I don't look old enough for this, okay? But in my 30 years of ministry, the emphasis has had to shift away from trying to reach the unchurched to the increasing problem of those who are de-churched. It's not that they haven't been. They have been. And maybe they have been and they don't want to come anymore. Now that's a challenge. That's a big challenge. These are the disappointed, the disillusioned, who in due process of time become the disappeared. who'd say it's the discouraging experience of one sort or another that has led them to become disparagers of church, of chapel, of God. What are we going to do for them? Who at the very least, you see, started out where Jesus' disciples were at one time, but are now much more like where he found them the day after his resurrection. The remaining 11, who'd thoroughly abandoned him in heart sometime past Gethsemane. It's awkward. It's often very difficult to address this issue. And it's difficult to address the pain and the complaints of those who don't come anymore. That's the most basic way we explain it, isn't it? It's not whether they come. It's what happens in the heart to ensure that they don't. Ever so tempting to walk away from the problem completely. But Jesus does the very opposite of that. He goes out to his disillusioned disciples, and this will be all about just how he did it. Matthew 28, verse 8. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, they were confused, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. Greetings, he said, and they came to him, clasped his feet, so he was going nowhere, was he? And they worshipped him. And then Jesus said to them, don't be naughty. Did he say that? He did not say that. He said, do not be afraid. Don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me. What's going on? How does he set about rebuilding this little group, this first little group of broken disciples? Well, look, the context is a fearful one. Their precious, beloved Jesus has died. They had hoped that he was the one who was going to restore the kingdom to Israel. But instead of that, they'd watched him die horribly. Even the sky had turned dark with the horror of the event. And the veil of the temple had been torn from top to bottom. And a burial for Jesus was so much less than they'd hoped for from him. Hoped for? They hadn't just hoped for. They'd pinned all their hopes on him. They'd walked away from their lives to follow him. And there he was, horribly gone. Hearts broken. Hope crushed. Lives seeming cold, empty, wasted, and pointless now. What's the point? One last thing for them to do. One last thing they could do. They would take some wet smellies, pour on ointments to the tomb to anoint his body. Horrible job in the climate, a few days from a messy death. But they'd screw up their courage and they'd go together. So the women got together, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. They're described for us in Matthew 27. They were women who'd been with the Lord and taken care of his needs for years. So they come along to the tomb with this terrible task in front of them and this horrible prospect to perform, the last thing they can possibly do for Jesus. And you know what they found when they came to the Lord's tomb. A stone, a huge round stone, picked up out of a channel and hurled away from the door of the tomb. Panic, what's happened to the body? So they dive into the tomb, and it's a small confined space, and in the semi-darkness inside, bang, there's an angel in their face. Can you imagine? You know, in the middle of San Dilo in broad daylight, you wouldn't be too keen to have an angel sort of in your face. In the dark of the tomb in a confined space. With a message that paralyzed them with fear. They've had a hard experience. And worst of all, Jesus is missing. Emotions were torn to tatters and in turmoil. And these women went out and were silent, Mark tells us, telling no one because, why? It is these women whose broken discipleship gets rebuilt first. How? Well, first thing to notice is that these women were off. They were headlong. They'd had enough. They were going. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy. Verse 8. They were off. They were going. Have you ever seen somebody walk out of church and that's it, they're off, they're going? Have you ever seen that? Now, some people make a habit of it. Don't anybody make a habit of it, okay? From one place to the next, you know, let's not go there. Sometimes you see somebody, the bit's between the teeth and they're off. And you've got to try and get there and say, now listen, stay there, whoa, whoa. Now listen, what's the trouble? These women were off. Hurried away. Quickly, it says in the Greek. They'd seen enough, they were afraid, and they were off. And of course, they were convinced of the rightness of their leaving. Most people usually are. But we're told that their reason for running off and skipping the graveside like this, it wasn't the product of faithful discipleship. It's the product of the failure of their faith. They were afraid. They were afraid. And so often, at the root of a person's broken discipleship is fear. And people need reassurance. It's a hard life, isn't it? Isn't it a hard life? It's a bit of a cruel world. So often, people who are off, they need reassurance, encouragement. Don't be afraid, says Jesus. Don't be afraid. If somebody's off and their discipleship's going to be broken, they're not going to follow Jesus anymore, what's happened is that fear has taken over from faith. They don't think he's to be trusted anymore. And that's a thing that will strike you with panic, you know. Panic and fear. Fear is the opposite of faith. We tend to think that the opposite of faith is doubt. Now, doubt is an intellectual thing, isn't it? But faith is trusting my life into his hands. Putting my life into the hands of Jesus Christ. Trusting him to do like he says and it's going to be all right. That's faith, isn't it? It's not really completely an intellectual thing. It's a trust thing, isn't it? Many years ago, and I can tell this story about one of my sons because the son is not here. So it's not Caleb, okay? Caleb is here. This isn't Caleb. We were refurbishing an old chapel. And we were refurbishing an old chapel in the middle of Gravesend in Kent, because I was up there in those days. And we had the boards off the floor, first floor level. There was an upstairs back room, an upper room, and the boards were off. So the floor was open, 6x2s all the way across, and they were rotten. So we were in there working on these things, putting repairs on the ends of these beams just to put it all back together, you see? And I'm sad to say, the floor slopes to this very day. We didn't do too much of a job of it, but it's strong. You know, it is strong. And I was there with my kids in the building. And a two-year-old suddenly appeared in my line of vision, walking along a 6x2 beam over an open floor. What are you going to say? What are you going to say? I'm just going to check. My wife said, you did know that story, didn't you? Okay, that's all right. I could have just put my foot horribly in it by telling her now after all these years. So the child is walking at me across a 6x2 beam. So it's 2 inches wide. What do you say to the child? I'll tell you what you say. You say, good boy, come to daddy. Because if you say, oh, don't go on there, don't go on there, the child is going to fall. Good boy, come to daddy. Trust is required. Trust is required. And Jesus meets these women, these broken down disciples who are on their toes and fleeing in fear. And he says, hello, come to me. Across this open floor that you fear. Trust in me. Suddenly, Jesus met them. Greetings, he said. It means rejoice. and they came to him. The first thing here is this, and there are three things: meeting, greeting, and worship. The first thing a broken disciple needs to do is to get back to Jesus, because discipleship is all about following Jesus. Being a Christian is all about turning from your sin to follow in Jesus' way and to follow him. That's correct, isn't it? Am I making a mistake here? No. No, nod at me. That's fine. I'll feel assured then, and I won't fear so much. So they come back to Jesus. Look, if you're a broken disciple, the first thing you need to do is to meet the living Lord Jesus again, the Jesus who's raised from the dead and alive forevermore, and in touch with his people. Are you in touch with him? Because to be a Christian is to be in touch with him. More than that, you see, these women, they met him, and he was kind, and having met with them and greeted them, they recognized him, and they took him by the knees. Anybody watch a match yesterday? There were some ladies at the back smiling as if they watched the match yesterday. I have to say, look, I missed the match yesterday because I was doing something for my family, and that's a terrible thing, isn't it? But, you know, first things first, even over rugby, we had to do it. But look, the point is this. The point about this Kiwi side, this All Black side, is if they put in a tackle, the person they tackle is going nowhere. Their tackling is good every time. It's clean every time. They take the knees. And these women, they see Jesus. Oh, it's Jesus. And they're so taken with Jesus. He's going nowhere. And they take his knees. Now, it doesn't say they knocked him to the floor, which is a good thing, I think, on the whole. But he was going nowhere from there. They laid hold of the Jesus they'd met. If you're a broken disciple today, the first thing you need to do is to meet again with Jesus and take hold. So you're not going to be parted. And they worshipped him. They worshipped him. There is nothing that heals a person's soul more than to take some time to meet, to recognize, and to worship the King of the universe, who shed his blood so you and I can live. You want to know what's good for you? Weird, isn't it? That's good for you. It is healing to the soul. That's how broken discipleship starts to be fixed. But there's one more thing here that's at least as important. In the process of fixing these people up, there's meeting Jesus. There's that greeting of Jesus that bids you welcome and says, don't be afraid anymore. There's recognition, commitment, there's worship. There's one more thing. Unusually, yesterday, I was listening to Desert Island Discs. Now, I don't stop and stop work and listen to Desert Island Discs. I was driving somewhere, okay? So I was getting bits of it as I was doing what I was doing. And who should be on Desert Island Discs but Keith Richards? Now, of course, you all know, being a bunch of, you know, rockers that you are, you all know who Keith Richards is, right? You all know that Keith Richards, guitarist of the Rolling Stones, okay? Rolling Stones. And obviously he's lived a rock star life, so it was quite a colourful edition of Desert Island Discs, I have to say. But there was one thing he said that spoke very plainly and clearly to me, and it was this. He spoke really movingly about a human tragedy that he himself had experienced. Because, you know, living the rock star lifestyle and all that, he'd been with a woman called Nida Pannenberg for a while, and they had a baby together. And, you know, we've heard of it now, we know about it now, it's been in all the papers and so on. But very, very sadly, this infant passed away with cot death syndrome. And all of a sudden, his drugs and his drink and his lifestyle are no good to him. They're no good to him. And his wife is across the other side of France, in northeast France, and he was in Paris, in southeast France, and he was up in Paris to play a concert. And he said this, the woman said to him, how did you take that? How did you deal with that? And he said, I thought I was going to go mad. But I knew I had to go on stage and do the show that night. Because I had to do what I was meant to do. I had to do what I was meant to do. Why am I telling that story? Because many of us can in some way identify with that thought. Perhaps there is help, there is healing, there's wholeness. There's a way back for broken disciples by doing again what we know we're to do. What we knew we were to do, perhaps from the start. And Jesus doesn't simply meet these women and greet these women. And they don't simply see and recognize and worship him. He commissions them. He says, this is what you are about. This is the meaning of you. This is the point and the purpose of you. This is what you are to do. We need to do what we're meant to do as disciples of Jesus. He says, go and tell my disciples and Peter, I'm going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see me in that place. Ladies, Jesus says to these women. No, it's okay. Not these ladies. Those ladies. He says to those ladies, I've got a job for you to do. And the job that I've got for you to do is to tell these others about me in such a way that they will know what they need to do in order to be blessed by God. Why is that so important? Well, it's important to know your place in the big scheme of things. But more than that, okay, let's put it like this. Would you say it is more blessed to give or to receive? See, one of the luxuries in life, actually, is to be able to do something really nice for somebody, isn't it? So they feel, I'll use the word, blessed. Blessed. To be able to step into a situation where somebody, you know, perhaps is down on their luck or something's bad or something's ugly, and to be able to just step in quietly and do something so that they feel blessed and helped and enriched. Doesn't that make you feel so much better than just doing something for yourself? The cure for your brokenness and the balm for your pain, broken disciple, is truly to pick up, not to put down, Christ's call and his trusting mission that he's got for you to do. Something he's got for you to do that, in his goodness, is going to last forever. And is going to do you a bit to change the world he's put you in with all its pain and grief. That's better, isn't it? That's better. So here's the thing. If you're a broken disciple, if you know a broken disciple who you long would follow Jesus once again, the key to it is this, is to meet and to hear the voice of Jesus. Do you know that hymn? Have you heard the voice of Jesus softly pleading with your heart? Do you know this hymn? Have you felt his presence glorious as he calls your soul apart? There's the vision. Meet and hear from Jesus. Find again the encouragement that he gives to those who walk with him. Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. To find again a position of trust in his commission, in his mission to a broken world. To go and do something useful for Jesus is going to last forever. To carry the promise to people who are despairing. Do this. And you will see me too. Well, here it is. It's time to lift the bonnet. Caleb bought a tractor yesterday. Bargain. Lawn tractor, right? In the collective. Didn't cost too much, let me promise you. And the trouble over there is you buy something and you don't quite know, do you? Until you get it home, you know? You buy something and it looks fine, sounds all right. Yeah. And you don't quite know until you get it home and lift the bonnet. We got it home, lift the bonnet, and guess what? Flat battery, okay? So that's on the charger. But here's the thing. You come to the end of a sermon, lift the bonnet. Where are you with this stuff that's going on in our passage today about mending a broken disciple? About meeting and hearing from the risen Jesus? About the things we've been, where are you in connection with these things we've been looking at in this passage today? About how Jesus recycles and brings back to reality people whose following of him has actually in reality by hard experience perhaps been broken. Time to lift the bonnet on your life. What is going on under there? Don't tell me, you don't need to. Tell yourself, tell him. Are you following Jesus as a daily life disciple? Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Thursday afternoon in the wind and the rain. It's not a weather forecast. Or can this be possible? Can it be possible that you are harboring hurt or even resentment for some wrong you think you have personally done or some hard experience you believe you've had? I suppose my question to you really is this. Where do you really want to be? Where is it that you want to be? And are you happy with where that is going to lead? Cherishing or nursing your hurt or your brokenness can be nice for a while. But nursing that hurt is going to lead to a life of nursing resentment and bitterness in death. How do I know? I've seen it. Where is your following of Jesus? Be encouraged. Take heart. Because Jesus is in the business of recycling broken disciples. And those guys, actually, that bunch of character, went on to change the world in his name. And that's the vision that he stretches out before those who bring their brokenness to him to follow him again. Will you, will we renew our passion and our desire to do that today? No more significant decision can a man or a woman make. That's what they're going to do today. Amen.